Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com. And today is July the 2nd in 2014, and we're completing day two, the second full day of the International Brotherhood of Magicians and the Society of American Magicians 10th Combined Convention here in St. Louis, Missouri. We start off today actually kind of early with the Society of American Magicians annual breakfast for the life members, and while there I get to chat for a little bit with Alan Watson and his wife Michelle. Alan is the person who is in charge of the New Zealand e-zine. If you are not a subscriber, you should be. It kind of keeps you up on to date on everything that's happening around the world in magic during each week. Next, I record a little bit of Sean Farquhar's speech. He was talking at the breakfast as the featured speaker, and partway into it, I started recording and afterwards asked him if it was okay to record, and he said sure. So I was able to broadcast this, compliments of Sean Farquhar. There are a couple of interesting stories in there, some of which he said, don't tell anybody this, but apparently you guys who are listening will know his secrets. Also, that we talk then with the dean of the SAM, Mr. George Schindler. Following that, we go upstairs to where there is a lecture taking place, and I got a chance to pull aside Alex Ramone. You might remember that I spoke with him earlier this year while he was working at South Lake Tahoe at the casino out there. And next, then, we follow up with David Oliver to kind of do a checkup on his health and see how that he's doing and what he's been up to and his recovery. Next, we go over and speak with Sandy Marshall, and he also gives us an update on the health of Simon Lovell and how he's doing. And some of you have heard some rumors, and Sandy kind of puts these to bed, as well as talking about a few other things that are upcoming for Magic Inc., which are pretty exciting, including a book that Simon has just released today, actually, called Betcha, How to Win Free Drinks for Life. And then come along with us as we have lunch with Michael Close and Don Weiberg. And each of those gentlemen represents the respective magazines for the SAM and the IBM. Specifically, that Michael, of course, is the editor of the MUM, and Don Weiberg actually is a proofreader for the Linking Ring. And so we talk a little bit about the magazines for the journals, I guess they should be called, for the organizations. I would also like to say, while I've got your attention here at the front end of this podcast, as a big thank you and a shout out to Hal Myers, who is also known as Damien, who just sent me an email during this these daily updates that I'm sending, saying thanks a lot, keep up the good work, thank you very much. And I certainly appreciate your cards and letters and your emails that are coming in. It is certainly encouraging and keeps me going. I know that you guys are out there, and I appreciate you listening, and it looks like that you're enjoying these daily updates then as well. I'm glad I'm able to help to let you guys know what's happening here in St. Louis.
Meet me in St. Louis.
Well, good morning. This is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast. And I say good morning because it is Wednesday morning. It's supposed to be day three. I call it day two because it's the first full day. And I mean full because it's 8 a.m. And having been up late at night, here we are. And we're at the Life Member Breakfast for the Society of American Magicians. And among those of us who are life members, I've got Alan Watson here. Hey, Alan.
Hi. It's good to be here.
And his wife, Michelle, as well. Hi, Michelle.
Good morning.
And you guys are all the way from Australia?
No, New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Pardon me? Sorry, Kiwis.
We're from Auckland, New Zealand.
Auckland. Okay. So Tony's from Auckland, too, isn't
yes,
he?
Yes, he is.
Okay. And so my question was just about the New Zealand e-zine. I don't know why I would say the Australian New Zealand. There is no such thing.
It's New Zealand e-zine.
That you've been publishing for how many years now?
15 years. We started 15 years ago.
Now, that is really a labor of love. I mean, that's...
It's funny how it started off, because it started off where it was only going to be for New Zealand magicians to let them know about the lectures.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, someone did a review on FISM, and it jumped to 2,000 overnight. And now it's expanded to 17,500, and then it goes on to Facebook, and there's 17 other publications that carry it as well around the world that translate into different languages.
Wow. And so when people want to, we'll tell a little bit about what the e-zine is for.
Okay. It keeps everyone up to date with what's actually happening with lectures, visiting magicians, also broken wands.
Conventions, yeah.
Yeah. Anything to do with the latest news or sometimes scandal within the magic fraternity.
That leads me to another question about what is off limits, or what are some things. I mean, obviously they talk about not flaming people, not, you know, disparaging others, but if there's something that, when you say scandal, for something that is true, I mean, there's some things that you say, I'm not going to publish this.
Okay, well, there's some things that are contentious. Yeah. I won't publish anything that's what I call error of fact.
Yeah.
But I usually give the other person a right of reply. I don't like exposure or people taking other people's ideas and profiting from them. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Walter Blaney would appreciate that a lot, too.
Yeah. Well, it's actually acted as a consumer's program as well, because quite often I get people write to me and say to me, hey, I've had this problem with a dealer. Well, I write to the dealer and say, look, there's two things that can happen, you know, and give them the opportunity to rectify it. And 9 times out of 10, they come back to me and say, look, it's been a computer problem or something, and it's resolved, and no one even knows.
Sure, yeah. But at least that kind of initiates something that actually resolves the situation.
It's a very positive thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, it seems like it's published on an irregular basis. You know, it's not always on a Thursday or a Saturday or something.
Okay. Now, there's a good reason for that. I say that it's going to go out on a Sunday,
okay,
but I usually publish it on a Friday. And the reason being is because if I have a computer problem, which I have had, and I've had to nurse it through,
mm-hmm,
if it doesn't come out in time, this is the truth, I get about 700 emails asking, gee, have I upset you? Or,
Am I taken off the list?
Am I taken off the list? And so that's why I publish it early, to get it out. So if I do have problems, I've got time to fix them.
Yeah.
He's also a full-time professional magician, so a lot of the time he's working that week or that night, or, you know, so it's a case of fitting it in when he can. At 3 o'clock in the morning, he might be doing it.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask next.
Yeah.
I was thinking that as a full-time pro, it's hard to,
yeah,
when you have other deadlines that are not paying you anything, and you've got a show or something that you're going to be doing, to try to have to go back and late at night and grind these things out.
Well, it is a labor of love, but it's my way of giving back to this art of ours, and that's why we've started Mag New Zealand, because computers have always been a hobby of ours, and
yeah,
it's worked out well for everybody.
Yeah, and so for people who want to submit news to you, then they would contact you at?
Okay, they can send it to our editor at magicnewzealand.com, and if you want to subscribe to it, you can go to www.magicnewzealand.com and hit the subscribe button, and it'll bring up your details. You put your first name, last name, and email, and it'll put you on the list.
Now, let's talk about magic just a little bit. As far as the kind of magic that you guys are performing, what is the market like in New Zealand? I mean, do you travel? I mentioned Australia. Do you actually go over to the continent, over to Australia, or only in New Zealand?
Yeah, we've been Vanuatu, Fiji, Australia. We've been all over the place.
Yeah.
We were at a theme park for 26 years doing a family magic illusion show.
Every weekend, every public school holiday.
About 250-300
shows
every year.
Two shows a day.
Yeah.
And then we do everything. Like a lot of my friends here in America, they think that I just do corporate magic, but I do birthday parties, kindergartens,
schools,
shopping malls.
Yeah.
I do everything.
Now, when you advertise yourself, do you have a website that will say, I mean, like each page, I mean...
Okay. I've got 5-6 websites.
Okay.
And each one's tailored. One's tailored towards my corporate, one's tailored to my children. So
good.
Each one...
That's wise.
And
so you have a different domain name for each one as well?
Yeah, I've got 7 different domains.
I wanted just to point that out so other people who are listening to this, who are considering being a professional, or those who are, should look at doing that same thing too. You shouldn't have a page that says I do it all. You know, bar mitzvahs and cruise ships and corporate whatever. And
also, if you do that, it doesn't put you high up in the search engine. It's best to be very specific in what you do so that it keeps you high up. If you keep it general, you tend to be on the 5th or 6th or 7th page.
Right.
And the secret is you've got to be on the first page.
Yeah, and the more specific you can be, then the better it is, because people are searching for certain things, and it'll come up that way.
Yeah.
Yep. Any other advice for people who are wanting to set up a website as far as having videos or that kind of a thing posted? Testimonials?
In my opinion, you've got to make sure that it looks like it hasn't been done by a child.
Mm-hmm.
It's better if you're not a web designer is to involve a friend that is, because nothing worse than looking at a website that's not what I call professional looking.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right, as we start to wrap up over here, then I appreciate your time, Alan, Michelle. But my podcast is called The Magic Word, and so my question is, what is your magic word? It wouldn't have to be a word. It could be a philosophy of life. What is your slogan? What do you live by? What's important to you?
Okay, well, there's two. One on life and one on magic. I call it, when I'm designing tricks or routines, I ask myself, am I creating a memorable, entertaining, magical experience? And magic is always third. Entertainment's got to be first. And my philosophy in life, family comes first.
That's wonderful.
My word is be entertaining.
All great. Thank you guys very much. For the Magic Word Podcast, Scotty out.
At the breakfast for the Society of American Magicians Life members, we had a guest speaker of Sean Farquhar. About partway into his speech, I started recording and asked if I could publish this, and he said that's fine to go ahead and broadcast it. So I apologize for missing the first half of it, but I think you'll enjoy hearing what he had to say.
All of a sudden, out of nowhere, all the members of my SAM came forward and gave things to me, and people who couldn't afford things. I have a friend, Anthony Young. He's been a member SAM. Oh, he's got to be 48 years now. It's coming up. And Anthony lives on a very fixed income. His wife has passed away. He lives like in a small suite, and he's Asian, and he gave me this red envelope, and it was pretty thick, and it was filled with money, and it was like, I can't take this. And he looked at me and said, don't insult me. I said,
that's true.
Yeah, it was an amazing thing for me. I wrote a list of all the people that donated things to me. In fact, so much stuff was given to me that I had to rent 2 storage lockers. Seriously. And props. I own 2 zigzags because they both sent over. It's like, well, he needs props. He needs to work. I was working on ships at the time, and everything was gone. It was like, well, he can't just have a deck of cards. Let's give him a zigzag. Thank you. I'll store that. I don't know where. Yeah, it really warmed my heart. It was at that point that I realized that magic wasn't just about a person. Magic was really a community. These people have come out for me for so long and in so many ways. It's just, it really makes a difference. I've got the most amazing assembly. I'm sure that Rod Chow's bragged about it some in the past, but we do open functions every year. Science World is this big thing for us. We have some great members like Lon Mandrake, who is the son of Leon Mandrake, Mandrake the Magician. So we've got a great heritage there. Every year we do these big public shows. 200-300 people come and have a dinner. We always go to one of Rod's friends, so it's always fun guessing what the food is. Duck feet, chicken feet. It's very cool. A cultural experience. That's the way I would describe it. Yeah. But it's always delicious. I always feel hungry about an hour later. My travels have been pretty extensive, and I've had the opportunity to be a lot of places around the world. The last count, my daughter's been to 42 countries. Yeah. She speaks French, German, Spanish, and Tagalog. And I speak American, Canadian, Australian, and English, and British. And apparently I don't do any of those very well. If I were to encapsulate what I've done to this point, it comes down very simply to, I was fortunate enough to have a father who loved magic. I'm the fourth generation of my family. Maybe you don't know that. My father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, and myself. And my daughter can do anything she wants to as long as she's a magician. No, I'm joking. She can do anything. Close-up stage, cards, I'm very fortunate to have grown up in a family where my father embraced the fact that I wanted to be a magician, and that then he introduced me to people like Carl Hemion, who introduced me to people like you. We're in the most unique profession in the world. About a year ago, we had a news team come out to my house for one of the SAM meetings, and they were basically doing a little interview of everybody and about magic in the community of Vancouver. And this news lady, she looked over, and there was this young man, he's about 12, and he was talking to Jens. Jens is here also. Jens is probably 69, and the newscaster says, get some footage of that. Look, the older gentleman is teaching the young boy a card trick. And I said, you can film that, but it's the young kid teaching the old kid. It was so cool. Seriously? He's really good. It's the only... Where do you see a bunch of plumbers get together and have a conversation and share with each other? There isn't any place else in the world. Any other... Even jugglers are very protective of each other, and they don't share a lot of things. Here, it's like it's so open. And I bragged to my wife once. I said, I think I could go into any city anywhere in the world and find a magician and go have dinner and a conversation.
Absolutely.
It's the best. And 4 or 5 years ago now, my daughter Hannah decided she wanted to go to a real school. What's that about? Hannah's 13 now in high school.
Wow.
She's smart. Thank God she doesn't get to see my old report cards. She did, she'd be going, that's not right. But since Hannah decided to go to a real school, I had to find a new way to do what I do, because Lori, Hannah, and I lived on a cruise ship for the first 7 years of her life. We were just at sea. And then all of a sudden, she wanted a stable... a friend for more than a week, that sort of thing, and I totally get it. And so I stayed at home for about a year and a half, and then my daughter and wife both came to me together and said, you're really angry. You need to go out and do shows. Go away. Exactly. And so I went back. I worked mainly for Disney Cruise Lines. I worked like a week on, take 2 weeks off, and then I go hang out with the magicians. But this is where it really came in handy, the bragging to my wife that I could go someplace. Now I travel alone. I eat a lot of meals alone in restaurants, and I'm getting really used to waitresses when they go, just you? Now my standard response is, unless you're hungry. But the great thing is, as I'm traveling now, I'm finding all these magicians because I want to have dinner with somebody else. And I just phone them up out of the clear blue. Hi, my name's Sean, I'm a magician. And I never say my whole name, I just say, my name's Sean, I'm a magician, I'm in town. I want to get together and have lunch or dinner or just hang out. And 99.9% have said yes. And it's really cool because when they do arrive and they see it's me, many of them know me. No, yeah, pay for it would be really cool. I seem to end up paying. But it's really cool because they said, well, I was coming anyways, but it's really cool it's you because I got questions about that Penn and Teller thing. Yeah, I'm very blessed. I can't imagine if I didn't have the community, how sad I would be traveling. 2 weeks ago on the Disney Fantasy, 3 weeks ago, it was my birthday. And it's the first time in my life that I've worked on my birthday. Second time in my life I've been away from my family for my birthday. And I call it, you know, National Sean Day. And the last three have been so odd since I hit 50. My 50th birthday I missed. I got on a plane the day before my birthday and planned on celebrating it in Malaysia. And when I arrived in Malaysia, it was the day after my birthday. Because the day I missed my 50th birthday. So I told everybody I'm not 50, I'm still 49. I just decayed by it. And then the 51st one came, and I was in Metz, France, by myself, just kind of staring around. And then this year, I was working on a ship, and I made 1,200 strangers in the Walt Disney Theater sing happy birthday to me.
Which was kind of cool.
But afterwards, I said, you know, it's kind of weird to celebrate your birthday alone. So if you see me, say hi. Just walk right up and say, hey, Sean, how are you? Can I buy you a drink? And it wasn't 15 minutes afterwards, I walked off the stage, went through this lounge, and a gentleman stopped me and said, hey, Sean, can I buy you a drink? And I looked down, and I realized he was wearing an IBM and SAM pin on his lapel. You're a magician. I am. Well, we sat, we started talking. Within about half an hour, another guy came by. Within about an hour, there were 6 of us, all magicians, on the same ship. It's never happened to me in my life. I phoned a youth guy. Robert is an amateur magician on board the ship who helps the kids. I phoned him and said, when you get off your ship, you got to come. We're having a small magic convention. Never happened to me in my life. It was really cool. I phoned home at $5.40 a minute off the ship to talk to my wife and my daughter and tell her about my birthday present, that I got to spend time with people who love what I love. I've been married to my wife for 25 years, 31 years together. April Fool's Day. If you're going to get married, that's, yeah, same. Absolutely. I remember that. It's the perfect date to get married because you got this cover right to noon if you forget. It was a plan. That was a fun day of my life. We got married. I arrived at the church early. We just moved. And so it wasn't our church that we're getting married in. And when we got there, we spoke to the pastor, and he told us that, you know, we'd have to take marriage courses, and that would take several, you know, months to go through. And I said, we really don't have that kind of time. We just lost we moved because the other place burned to the ground. So, so we really don't have that time. We're trying to, you know, get back on our feet. We have to travel. And he was like, well, you know, marriage is more than just saying I love you and it's done. There's a lot of reconciliation. There's a lot of give and take. And you have to take some courses to understand. And in the pastor's office, I opened up his closet. I said, see that room in there? And yes. I said, this is what my wife and I live in on a cruise ship with her 30 pairs of shoes, my 8 doves, and a rabbit. I said, really? Yes, you're fine. On the day of the wedding, my brother and I were sitting behind waiting, you know, for the bride to arrive. And my brother came back, walks up and goes, says, she's here. And the priest looks and said, she's on time. I said, well, yeah, the curtain goes up. He said, this place, I mean, he says, and you're not nervous in any way? I said, look out there. It's only half a house. The amount of people that responded, though, I don't know if it happened with you guys, but the amount of people that responded to my wedding invitation with, if I fly there, and this is just a joke. And it was just 11 months after the fire, so we really didn't have anything, and I had to find a way to. I was the decorator, I was the chef for the meal, I was the DJ, I was everything for our wedding because I'd done a show at this place called Sev's, and I did a walk around for 2.5 months to pay the rent for the hall that we used, and I couldn't invite all my friends, all the people of the community, because I couldn't afford to feed them all. And so I convinced my other friend who ran the magic shop in town to hold a magic convention that weekend. And he held it in the hotel right next door to Seth's. And so they all went and watched a gala show while we got married and had a reception, and then they all came over and danced with us. And it was really kind of a cool thing to be able to still have them there, but not have to pay for them. Now, you know, in my twilight years, as I get older, I laugh because all my nieces, nephews, and family are all getting married now. And my standard line is when I open that envelope, hey, we got a bill for $1,000. I go, what? Yeah, it's another wedding invitation. It's really sad. Now, as I'm getting older and stepping into an office that just frightens me to death, I'm really thrilled to be able to be a life member of both organizations. That this is something very special to me. I wanted to do this years and years and years ago. In fact, I made an application, some things fall through, and it all came back together, which is grand. But I've had a long, rich history with the SAM, and I love that. Being, you know, an international representative from Canada is such a cool thing. I was RVP for 9 years, and I tried to develop more assemblies in my area, into Manitoba, and into the Maritimes. It's such a vast country, Canada, and it's so spread out. And, you know, I can drive from my house 13 hours in any direction and not leave my province. You can put 5 of the state of Texas into my province, and it's not the big one. In fact, I have a funny story about that. I said that as a statement in a lounge a couple of years ago, and this Texan took offense to it. He says, not true. I said, no, sir, it really is. And he goes, boy, you just don't understand. I can get in my truck, and I can drive all day, all night, and all the next day and not make it to the other side of my ranch. And I looked right at him and smiled and said, I used to have a truck just like that. Then I picked my teeth up off the floor. We went along. I lived in Texas for almost a year and a half. Most people don't know that. I hide a lot of stuff. Most people don't know that I lived in Texas and Plano, worked for Ross Pro for about a year and a half. And of course, I picked a condominium in a dry community. That was a real smart move on my part. The only blessing was that my next door neighbor was a Budweiser representative. We became very good friends. At one time, my face looked like that. It was a very long time ago, but I share that in common. And Dan just looked at me going, really? Didn't know that. A very long time ago. I was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. Which one? That's the most interesting question of all, because you know the movie's going to come out this year, and it has Raphael, Leonardo, Donatello, and Michelangelo. But if you ever watched the television series by the same people that produced the first three movies, it was called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: The Next Mutation, and they had one extra. Mm-hmm. They decided they needed a better demographic, and they needed to attract girls. Okay. So they created one called Venus de Milo. Mm-hmm. And I was the girl turtle.
It's possible.
You tell anybody outside this room, and I'll kill you all. My daughter just discovered, she was reading through some stuff, and I keep all the scripts from every movie, motion picture. I've done 50-some-odd movies, and I worked 7 years in The X-Files and Highlander and stuff like that. And she goes through these boxes now, and she pulls out and says, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, who are you? I was one of the turtles. Which one? I was one that fought a lot. Which one? I was the girl. Seriously, Dad? Yeah, that's not going to go over so well. When I'm, you know, retired, she does that little party where they talk about you. I'm pretty sure that's going to be a big slide. I could talk forever. I just wanted to say thank you very much for inviting me to speak to you, for the phenomenal award. It's beautiful. But most for the camaraderie, for the friendship. I look around, I smile, and I giggle. I never realized, you know, I know 90% of you and didn't know which ones were life members, which ones aren't. I give everybody 5 minutes. I just think this is an awesome opportunity. Thank you so much for giving this time to me, Dan. I do appreciate it.
Hey.
All right, this is Scott Wells from the Magic Word Podcast, and we just finished our breakfast for the life members, and I have another fellow life member and the dean of the Society of American Magicians, Mr. George Schindler. Hello, George.
Good morning.
It is a good morning, and I want to thank you very much for attending this as well. We had a good turnout, looks like, here
very
as well.
Right, very good turnout. We have a lot more members than we anticipated.
How many did he say we have?
Over 200 and something, I forgot what it was.
Yeah. Quite a few still living members. Now, you are the dean of the SAM, and for those who are members of the IBM who might be listening and don't understand, or younger people who don't know what a dean is, I know that there's a long, great history about deans.
There have been 9 deans in the history of the SAM from 1903 to now. 1902 is when they started. The first dean they made up later. And I don't know how I got to be dean. Years ago, I succeeded Jay Marshall, who was my idol. And they asked him, you know, would you like to be dean? And he says, what did the dean do?
What did the dean do?
What did the dean do? And they said, the dean don't do nothing. He says, I'll take the job. And so since that, they've been kidding me. You say, well, you're the dean. You don't do nothing. It's a very great honor, and it's a great title. And it's a public relations thing, you know. You're visible.
Yeah, and it started with Houdini. Was he the first?
No. Houdini never made it to dean.
Okay.
Absolutely.
It was
Keller.
Keller, that's what I'm thinking.
Keller and Gene Hugard was a dean. Al Baker was a dean. I don't remember all in history.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you get the job till you die.
Yeah.
And one guy said, what do the deans do? The deans die. I said, I don't want that part. But it's a great honor.
I want it for life, not for death.
Well,
yeah.
The president, the sitting president, always recommends the dean at that period of time. And John Apperson was president when I became dean. He did a very... went around and polled all the members of the council and said, who would you recommend? He polled me, and I said, I'll recommend Dave Goodsell.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was very nice that they came up with... I'm very pleased with that. In history, I mean, I'm not one of the old guys like that, but as I get older, I'm realizing I can't think of who else is old enough to be dean.
Yeah, that has this kind of knowledge that you do, well, having done close-up and stage and everything that you
need. That's just so much that it's your dedication to the society and the work you've done for the society. Hopefully you're also a performer.
Yes.
Most of the deans have been performers. Dorney was one of the only dean I never, in my recent time, that I would like to have met. Mm-hmm. I met Hugh Garden, I met Al Baker back then, but I never met Dorney. I would love to. He was a very colorful guy.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why I started talking about it, but anyway, it's a great honor to have.
And I'm kind of confused about other deans. I know, like, for example, Eric DeCamps is a dean of assembly, so each assembly has a dean?
Your assembly could have a dean.
Okay. I know that we have Chuck Lear, you know, in Dallas as a dean and others.
Yeah, that's fine. It's a very nice title to give somebody, and the dean is usually a guy who has some wisdom, mm-hmm. usually an older guy because he's got the experience.
Exactly.
But as I said, it would be nice if he's also a magician. In our society, we've all been magicians, all the deans, as it turns out, performers.
Performing magicians, not just collectors.
But a lot of the closest collector we had was H. Adrian Smith.
Sure.
He was a collector, but he was also a performer earlier.
I always knew him just as a collector. I've got some of his books, in fact.
His collection is still in Providence, Rhode Island. A very big collection.
Some of that was sold off, and I got...
Did you get some of that?
I did get, yeah. But
I became a collector recently. I collect dust. And,
you get a lot of it, huh?
You asked my wife about that. I'm not really deep into history and collecting. But right now we're interested in promoting... I was mentioning this morning that
Houdini Fund.
This is something that your listeners would probably be. Any member of the society or any magician or allied artist, that means a ventriloquist, a clown, a juggler, is entitled to money when they're ill through the Magic Endowment Fund of the SAF. And the Houdini Fund covers that. Money's put aside, and it's grown over the many, many years we've had this. So we have a lot of money. And money can be given as a grant, not a loan, to anybody who is ill, who needs extra money, outside of your normal insurance. I mean, people have insurance, but the insurance doesn't cover everything. Hospital expenses are not covered by a lot of insurance, a television set in a room if you need it, or even outpatient stuff.
Or something like Katrina, as I recall, that some of the money had gone to Katrina victims.
That came from
a separate fund?
It's called a disaster fund, relief fund. If it's medical, society, Houdini Fund will cover it. If it's physical damage because of a disaster, the disaster fund will cover it.
Okay.
The Houdini Fund is much older, so we have a lot more money.
Okay.
But not that we want to hear from people to be sick, but we'd like to hear from any magician or an allied artist who is ill and needs money, extra money, and we have some high-profile people. Not to be embarrassed, if you come to this fund and it's confidential, nobody knows who's except the three trustees.
I understand.
And two of the trustees, I don't know who, we just discussed the case.
Yeah.
And so we've given away a lot of money, but there's a lot of money to be given.
Mm-hmm.
Given, not loan.
Okay.
People come forward. All they have to do is request the money or have a relative or even an assembly member to request funds. And they need a proof of the fact that they are ill. That could be
a
doctor's letter.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be a medical note or a bill for the hospital.
Insurance or...
Yeah, as long as we verify.
Saying something's not covered.
Yeah, but that's a legal thing. It's in trouble to society. And if you go to, magicsam.com, you could click on Houdini Fund. It'll tell you how to go about it. And it's not an embarrassing thing. People say, oh, I'm not going to ask for money. Nobody knows you're getting it.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of money, an awful lot of money. And because of our tax-free exemption, we have to spend money.
Okay.
In order to keep the...
So do they send an email to somebody in specific, or all the details?
I happen to be the trustee, but there are three trustees. I happen to be the trustee right now.
So they can contact you how?
You contact me either directly or through the SAM or through the IBM.
Directly, what would be your email?
Dean@magicsam.com.
Easy enough.
Easy enough to remember.
Yeah, okay.
Or they go to the website, which gives you a form they can fill out, and they can fax it to me. And they can do it by telephone. Mm-hmm. All I need is a physical piece of paper, which they can fax.
Sure.
And we've got, it's a wonderful thing. Houdini, even it's named after Houdini. Somebody said that Houdini's will provided it. That wasn't so. Houdini used to go to hospitals and bring sick guys cigars, magazine. Anyway, when he died, his wife, Bess, said, I have $1,000 I'm going to give toward this fund, because the parent assembly had that fund many years before.
Mm-hmm.
She said, but I don't want people to forget his name. So the fund must always be the Houdini Hospital Fund. So little did she know that his name is not forgotten. It's been pushing us all through.
Yeah,
And so she set it up with $1,000.
That was a lot of money back then.
Oh, yes.
In the '20s.
Hey, our initial thing, when you became a member, a dollar of your dues went to the Houdini Fund way back in the early days.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we accept donations. The donations, of course, are just to enhance what we have already. The Disaster Fund could use more money if people want to donate to that in memory of a guy who died, or you come into a windfall or whatever.
And that can be done also through the MagicSam.com?
MagicSam.com, yeah.
Okay. Well, George, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Words. My question to
now
you...
I'm going
to
listen.
That's right, learn how to use this podcast thing. So my question is, what is your magic word? You know, what is important to you? It's not necessarily, it couldn't be a word, maybe a phrase. You know, what is your slogan? What is your philosophy of life?
Entertainment first. You're booked as a performer.
Yeah.
Some people tell jokes. Some people do magic. I prefer to do magic, but the reason you're booked is for entertainment, not to fool anybody. If I wanted to fool people, I'd be a politician.
Yeah.
But your aim in magic in particular is to entertain.
Yeah.
And it's not mystical anymore. Years ago, we were afraid of magicians or pickpockets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We're entertainers first. Now, my particular field is magic.
Yeah.
But as long as we're entertaining and you don't bore the hell out of a guy with you know, counting tricks,
yeah.
To me, that's my motto.
Important. And you've always done that, certainly. You know, that,
My lecture is titled Entertainment. Go look for my DVD if you're going
to
find it.
It is. I was going to say that it's an honor for me to talk with you, not only as a friend, but also as someone who the first trick I really ever did came from your notes when you came through Tulsa and lectured back in the 70s, and it was a copper-silver transposition, and there's still a presentation I do with that.
I learned that from... what the heck was his name? He was a gambler. Some gambler guy, I forget.
Uh-huh.
Showed it to me, and I said, well, what is it? It's great. I've done it the way he did it.
Yeah.
It came out of the Stars of Magic, if you want to look it up somewhere.
Hmm. Okay.
That's a copper silver routine, but I enhanced it a little bit.
Yeah, you did, and I love it. I still do it, and I've got a presentation.
It's a trick I invented back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I was doing it for many, many years, where a signed card winds up in a sealed pack.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sean Farquhar loved that trick. So we talked about it for a while, and he modified it. He made it, you probably saw it.
Yeah, featured effect.
A featured effect. And he was on the Penn & Teller show, and they asked him about it. He gave me credit for it.
How nice.
Which I thought was unbelievable. I mean, here is a man who's the top of his field. He didn't have to say, it was an idea by George Schindler. He did it yesterday. He fooled the hell out of me. I got to talk to him. His method is a little different than mine. But
yours was the genesis that got him thinking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I came up with that trick in 1950. We used to sell it for a buck. I used to work at Max Holden's magic shop when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And we sold the trick for a dollar.
Uh-huh.
And it's so great. So somebody said, well, you put it on the market. I said, no, I don't want to put it on the market. Sean is doing it. Ricky J is doing it.
Yeah.
But how it evolves.
Yeah.
It's so wonderful to see things like that.
It is. I'm sure to see your creations, your babies kind of grow up into adulthood.
I got to kick it. I'm not going to mention his name. I met a guy in the lobby who wanted to meet for a long time. We chatted last night. And after talking for a little while, he says, you're George Schindler? I said, yeah. He said, my first magic book was really... I couldn't believe this is an old guy. Not that I'm so young, but back in the 60s, he saw this book, and from that he came forward, and he's a magician today.
Yeah.
And a well-known name.
Yeah.
Said, that's a really remarkable
thing. Inspired
him.
Yeah.
He said, so you're his father. I said, don't blame me. If you allow us a trick up, I don't want anyone to know.
Well, I'm going to give you a lot of credit myself as well, because it was that one copper silver that kind of, it's like, if I can do that, I can do something else, and it just kind of one thing led to another. So that was the first thing.
There were two stories. I tell you, I worked at the Magic Castle. I worked at the Magic Castle once a year, just for the fun of it.
Sure.
Where else can I work 16, 20 shows a week? But anyway,
they get paid for it.
Jay Marshall said, you want to work the castle, save up for it.
Well, not anymore, though.
No,
yeah,
well,
right.
Yeah, the money's much better now than it used to be. Anyway, I'm sitting having lunch there, and a woman comes over to me, gives me a squeeze and a hug and a kiss. George, how are you? I go, who the hell are you? And I recognize her. She says, don't you remember you were in Texas when I was a little girl?
Of course you remember.
You were my first lecturer. That's wonderful. It's Lisa Mena.
Oh, Lisa, sure.
She's traveling around the world. She's a well-known magician.
Yeah.
And it was a great honor. It's
she may have been at that same lecture when I was.
It could be. Johnny Sissom in Texas.
Yeah.
I brought her to that meeting. I remember Johnny. Johnny was another character. We could talk.
He was great. No, that's true. Yeah, Johnny had run the Kennedy Museum.
Yes, he did.
Down there in Dallas. I did a podcast a while back with Walter Blaney. We were talking about, it was, you know, on the anniversary of the Kennedy assassination, and we talked about Johnny Sisson and some other things that happened.
Johnny has a very interesting story that he told me, which is, people don't know, and it's a good place to record it. There was a guy named Russell Swan. I remember
Russell Swan. I've never met him.
One of my idols in New York. He was a wonderful, funny comedy magician. Yeah. Played really high class places. He was down in Texas, and Johnny Sisson went to see him after Johnny. He said to Johnny, "Your teeth need work." And Johnny said, "I can't afford it." And so Russell Swan paid.
Had Johnny's teeth.
Johnny's teeth fixed.
Wow.
As a fellow magician, he just met out of the. And Johnny was, that's his story, is that Russell Swan, he fixed my teeth.
Wow.
That's a great honor, you know.
That's a quite a story.
Yeah. There was a guy in New York called Willie Schneider. Willie Schneider was a jeweler, a well-to-do magician, but well-to-do, not as a magician, but he was very well-known.
Yeah.
And I think, I used to call him the granddaddy of lectures, because we didn't have lectures back in the 40s. But he would get guys in his office for $3, and then he'd give them all the money.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to see the magic. Anyway, you know, what's his name? Finneran. Francis Carlyle. Francis was always down on his luck. He's a wonderful, nice guy, but he drank a little too much. And he was always but Willie Schneider says, you know, he says, what size are you? You're 34? I got a suit in my closet I can't use. Come on over and pick it up. And Willie went out and bought a suit.
Yeah.
Hung it in his closet. That's okay. Because Carlyle didn't want to take anything.
Yeah.
He wouldn't take charity.
And so he bought a new suit.
He bought a new suit.
To say.
Probably fit you. I can't use this anymore. And that's the only way he could support.
Yeah.
So there are people like that who just, you know.
That's amazing. That's
they don't want to take anything.
It's a great fraternity.
Yeah, and Sean Farquhar spoke this morning. He was absolutely right. Anywhere in the world we go. The first time I ever went to England, the guy who was supposed to pick me up had some trouble. So we were at the airport in a new country. This guy comes along and says, I'm here to pick you up. I'll take you to a hotel. Let me do some sightseeing. He took us around. I said, who are you? He says, Terry Seabrook. He's a great performer. And we became fast friends.
Sure.
Only in magic can you do this.
Yeah.
It's really.
Yeah, Uncle Terry and I, we've got to be best friends also.
I miss him
so much. He used to stay at our house all the time. I've told this story on the podcast several times in the past, but every time he would stay with us, we moved within 6 months. He stayed with us 4 times. We moved each time. With
really?
His.
Has something to do with his act?
I don't know. It was funny.
Yeah, I do a lot of MC stuff occasionally. In one of Terry's books, he had a little card that he developed for MCs to carry. It had a listing of the name of the act, how much time you did, whether you need a mic. And he had these little cards printed. And I said, that's great. So I made them up. One day we were working a show together. I said, hey, Terry, let me see the cards. He said, what cards? He said, I showed the little cards. He said, do they work? He never used it.
That's funny. That's funny. All right, well, we're getting ready for another event. George, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure.
You'll let me know when I can listen to this.
I will do that. That was George Schindler for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. Well, we just finished a lecture over here by the, is it the Koreans? Or what was it actually?
It was the Korean College of Magic. The College of Magic of Korea. And they have, amazing. As everybody knows, in the last few years, it seems that Korea really jumped to the top of the, to the map and is really has strong performers. And so they were sharing some of the magic. So it's pretty interesting thinking, you know?
Just yesterday that I was talking with. Sounds like I'll step outside over here and start to get loud. Lance Burton was talking about that very thing. He said, I knew that someone was teaching these guys because it seems like the Korea was really just exploding with some great magicians. Oh, by the way, let me welcome Alex Ramon. Hello,
oh,
Alex.
Oh, hi, yes. This is, Scott, we just started talking.
Yes,
I'm Alex Ramon, and always love talking to you, so thanks for having me on the show again.
Yeah.
You're
one of the favorites.
Definitely.
It seems like we had a lot of people who have downloaded
your
podcast.
That's
we were back
that's
there.
That's sweet. That's very nice, and I'm happy. happy. I've had a few people actually email me and message me from the podcast. Said, hey, I listened to it. I really enjoyed it. So that always
great stuff. People who didn't hear that need to go back. And it was, about April, I think, of this year or so.
A little earlier than that, but yes.
February.
I think around February.
Yeah, 2014. Go back and do the archives and look up Alex Ramone.
Check it out.
Exactly right. I had some good ideas. Oh, so we're back over here. So the fella who was the instructor, what's his name?
Lucas was just the one that was lecturing. And Lucas, I had the opportunity to work with Lucas at Genie Bash a couple years ago.
Oh, sure.
And that was the first time that in Florida and Orlando. And it was the first time that I had ever seen Lucas perform.
Yeah.
And I was just amazed because, as we had talked about before, I haven't been to a few magic conventions for a few years because I've been working six nights a week, which is great, but it was nice to go to a magic convention and see all these performers. And Lucas is just a smart guy. He's just released these DVDs that have been really being praised in the magic community.
And his name amazing. Again is Lucas what? His last
Lucas.
Name?
Oh, he just goes by Lucas.
Okay.
I don't know.
One name,
I don't know. Chair,
I guess.
Exactly.
Okay. Dunninger.
Okay. Exactly. So, so it's pretty cool. So, Lucas was there as another Korean teaching some close-up magic, had really great effects, and visual. It seems that their kind of magic and their style is so visual.
And fast. Yeah.
And, interesting keepsakes, because this other guy, he created a card trick where he wanted to make a card trick giveaway, but the card do have a different shape at the end as opposed to just a regular rectangular playing card, and he attached the Joker on it. I mean, it's just really amazing. So, hey, having a good time so far here at SAM IBM.
Yep. And so this is your first convention for a while, and you're going to be one of the performers.
I'm performing tonight, actually.
Okay.
I'm debuting an illusion that I've been working on for a number of years, and I'm pretty excited about it. A friend of mine said, how can you debut an illusion in front of a bunch of magicians?
Aren't you gonna be... all places.
Yeah, and I said, actually, I'm really happy about that, because then they could say, yeah, that worked, or no,
they
that didn't.
Give you some good feedback.
Yeah.
So then we know when the paying crowd.
Exactly. So tonight we're performing an illusion. I call it Acoustic Levitation is the name of it. Okay. Jim Steinmeier and I work together on it. And
I know you guys collaborate on a lot of things.
Yep, Jim's getting in here, and he's excited to see it because he has not seen me perform it yet.
Yep.
And like I said, I'm debuting it for the first time tonight.
Now this won't be
it.
Heard until tomorrow, so I'm not going to be able to talk with you afterwards as well. Since we're kind of in a quiet corner, can you share what's going to happen or
what
the effect is?
Essentially, I have speakers on stage, and my assistant is levitated by the sound of the music.
Oh, sound of music.
So the music.
The vibration.
Vibrations, the impulse of it. And then we have a special sequence in there, and you'll see some photos probably that I'll post.
Okay.
And we go into a black blackout, and our costumes completely light up.
Oh,
they're
cool.
All in ELY. Wire, we're glowing, she's floating into the air about 8 feet in the air.
Mm-hmm.
There's LEDs among the props that start doing a light show, and it's a pretty high energy, interesting illusion. So I hope you guys have a chance to see it.
Wow. And so after the success of this will be in your show, and so people can see that when you go on tour. You're still touring out in California?
We're doing a West Coast tour. We have Northern California this summer, and in the fall we're doing Southern California, and then we're doing the Pacific Northwest early next year.
Yeah. Now, earlier this year, we were talking about that you had, of course, completed your little over 2-year run there in South Lake Tahoe.
Right.
And we were also talking about the lady, my mind just went blank, who was sponsoring Siegfried and Roy and the circus and Ringling Brothers.
Kenneth and Nicole Feld.
Nicole Feld. That she was saying she had something in mind for you in the future. Is something coming to fruition?
Well, Nicole and I keep in touch, and she's great. I think, she said, if we have a project, we'll continue to work together if we have some for you. We're always in contact.
Immediate future.
Nothing immediate.
Okay.
I mean, if something comes up, we'll discuss the possibilities.
That's right.
But, that's the great thing is I was just telling somebody about, how in entertainment, and you kind of think of it like actors and directors. An actor and a director can work together on a movie, on a project. It can be very, very successful. And then the director does other movies and works with other actors, and the actor does other movies and works with other directors and producers. And then you might revisit each other 10 years later and collaborate on a new movie project. It just seems that's the, as I am in this business a longer time,
longer time.
Happens.
You're like 27?
I'm still in my 20s. That's Yeah, so, you know, I mean, so that's just it, is that you keep those relationships open, and hopefully down the road we'll work together again. I'd love it.
Right.
But actually, it's so funny that you said that, because I just did the Teen Weekend, and during the Teen Weekend...
That's right, this thing that we just did with Lance Burton.
Jeff McBride, and Eugene Berger.
Jeff mentioned
and
your name.
I was part of the very first Teen Weekend Teen Weekend program that they did at the World Magic Seminar, just about, 11 years ago.
Okay. And you were one of the teens.
And now, I was a teen, yeah. I was 17 or so. And then years later, you know, Becky Wells, Bill and Becky Wells, who kind of are in charge of that program,
right,
called me up and said, would you be a part of it? Would you speak and talk? And wow, I did. And it was funny because Lance comes over to me after they introduced me, because I hadn't seen him before. And
yeah,
he comes over to me and goes, oh my gosh. He's like, how old are you now? What do you do? You know, and it was just a blast to see
you're
those guys
really
again.
Good. Man, I haven't seen you.
I haven't seen you for a while. So, yeah, I'm so happy that I'm here at the IBM SAM. It's nice to see magicians and connect with people like you again, and Lance that I haven't seen for years, and Jeff and Eugene, and make new friends. And like I said, tonight we'll be performing, debuting a new illusion.
Then you relax
and
tomorrow.
Sort of, because the show has to get back to California. I have a show in Sacramento this Sunday.
Okay.
So the show, they were saying to me that...
Pack and go.
Exactly. Doing the show tonight, loading out tonight, truck takes off tonight back to California.
So you're finished. People won't see you tomorrow then. You're going to be...
No, I will be here, but the truck
then,
and the props
and
are
the rest of the guys.
Show.
Okay,
yeah, my crew flies out tomorrow, and then myself and Megan, my assistant, fly out on Saturday for the show Sunday in Sacramento.
Okay. Now, going back to Tahoe, and that run was over. Is there anybody who's come in and taken the place? Is there a new magic show going on?
There's no magic shows in Lake Tahoe right now.
Okay.
I mean, I think that it was, you know, opportunities arise, they leave. It's kind of up and down. And when the opportunity is there, you want to seize the opportunity. When it's not there, you move on to others.
And you were one of the longest running acts, I think, there in that
we had a long
magic shows.
Yeah, we had a long run. And definitely, and this is a credit to everyone involved, we just had one of the most successful shows in that property for a long time. And so... You know, I couldn't be more happy. And as I said on the last podcast, I couldn't have been asked to be better received, to have the community, the support of the community involved in my show.
Right.
And I can't wait to, see Tahoe again and you know.
It's a great place. It's a good
place. Oh, it's beautiful.
It is. And you're one of my favorite performers.
Thank you.
I said so many times, you're one of the most creative guys and energetic and just fun to watch.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You interact with your audience so well, I think.
Thank you.
Break that forth. Well, I'm not saying that just because you're standing here.
No. Now that I am, you better say that.
That's right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on the show again.
Okay. Alex Ramone for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. Well, it's still day two. I call it full day two because we got a lot of full things, and it's not even noon yet. And continue to run into all kinds of friends that I really know that you guys want to hear from as well. We talked with this fellow last fall, and so we're going to hear an update from Mr. David Oliver. David, how are you, man?
Oh, my gosh, I'm back.
Back from the dead, almost.
Three times. I am fantabulous.
Good. You're looking really good.
Well, thank you. Yes, the weight is coming back on.
Yeah?
So,
okay.
But,
I remember you telling me the last time we chatted that you were, I guess what, having protein shakes and everything you could, you know, and ice cream and whatever,
bulking up. They wanted me to bulk up after all the surgeries and eat ice cream and everything. Well, it's adding up now.
Yeah,
so
now you're going to have to start cutting back or start watching what it is, I guess.
I've been pretty careful, but some of the meds add weight, so I've got to make a good balance.
And what about exercise? I mean, are you having to walk so many miles a day or something? Or?
We're building up to that. I still have some leg issues from all the muscle atrophy from being in the hospital for 5.5 months, but I've pushed through that. I still use a cane, as you see, just for balance more than anything, but I exercise regularly.
Now, I've been seeing on Facebook where you've been performing and doing some shows already and everything and getting back in action?
Yeah, jumping in feet first. I mean, I did one show last year with everything, and then I decided, let's do 21 at the Castle. Why not?
Yeah, so you did a whole week at the Castle then.
Yeah, a week in the Castle in April.
Were you doing the parlor stage?
I was the closing act in the Palace.
Oh, wow.
So for the week with Joe Monti, Derek Hughes, Christopher Hart, and myself. So it was
and that was just like a week or two ago, wasn't it?
No, that was
earlier this year?
It was back in April, end of April.
Okay.
So
it
all blends together.
Oh, it does kind of, that's right.
But no, I've been very fortunate I went to a convention on Cape Cod. I've been to a couple of conventions in New York. Uh-huh. I was on the Salute to Magic show in New York. I got back to doing the Mystery Lounge in Boston, Monday Night Magic in New York.
Right.
I'm here. I'm headed to Abbott's after this. Tannis Camp in between.
Yep.
So I'm taking the opportunity now that I'm healthy enough to travel to just go around and say thank you to
you
everybody.
Really are jumping in with both feet and everything. So you're looking around for people who've got the Do Magic purple bands?
Oh, they're still out there. They're still out there. And the support is still overwhelming and just humbling beyond belief.
Yeah.
But it's...
I'm sure all the prayers and support. I mean, you're still my prayers every night. You know, I mean, I know you're still on the road to recovery. And so... It's important, I think, everybody continue.
Well, it's not over yet. I still have a long way to go.
Yeah.
And I'm doing well. I'm surpassing a lot of the doctor's expectations, but I still have a long way to go.
And your lungs are not being rejected? I mean, your body
is... No, we've had a couple of minor scares in the past couple of months, but adjustments in medication and a couple of other treatments.
That sounds redundant. A minor scare. Either it's a scare or it's not serious. I mean, it's minor, but I mean...
Trust me, there's a...
I'd be scared to death. Wow.
There's a scale.
Okay.
There's a scale of scaredness.
Okay.
So on a scale from 1 to 10, these scares were about a 2.
Okay.
So that's why I
said... Compared to some other things you've seen.
Yes.
Okay.
Other things I've seen, experienced, and been through, so... You know, we had to jump on it right away, and sometimes my doctors annoy me with different things. I had to have some medical tests done here in St. Louis yesterday.
Since you've been here, okay.
My doctors would not allow me to take a week off, so they arranged with a hospital here in St. Louis for me to leave the convention for a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
I went over, had the medical procedures done, came back, and I'm still here.
That's great.
So, but as annoying as some of that can be, it's much better than the alternative.
Yeah, that's true.
And if these are the only complications I have to deal with based on what I went through, I have no issue with it.
It sounds like that the that you're doing so very well that you're really not being winded or anything. You know, when I talked to Paul Green, for an example, you know, that Paul was having an issue with his health issues, you know, basically that he's having some breathing problems. And whenever that he's gone and performed, he said, yeah, I'm dead for like, if I go work with Castle, I'm dead for like 3 days, well, literally.
Well, choose your words wisely.
Yes, I should. He's exhausted for 3 days. He has to almost recover. So you were able to do the 21 shows and it really didn't bother you much?
Well, the first couple of days got to me a little bit. It was more just the doing it in such succession, such rapid succession. But I had gotten back into it a little bit and done a few shows at some comedy clubs in the New York, Boston area just to get my feet wet. So going to the Castle was just a version of more momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very invigorating. Very invigorating.
Sure. Mentally as well.
Mentally, spiritually, physically, the support that we had out there.
I can just imagine all the people who came out. They knew you were going to be there and just came.
Well, I'll tell you, it's as I said earlier, it's been overwhelming. The love and support from this community is like something I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And I hear that from everyone in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and now it's time to pass that on to somebody else.
This morning at the SAM Life Members Breakfast, that Sean Farquhar was talking about how that, you know, like no other profession, like if you're a plumber or whatever else, I mean, you can't travel and have the camaraderie and the fellowship and the fraternal feelings that you get from this brotherhood, basically, the worldwide, you know, that you can call somebody and they're willing to help. And then George Schindler was talking about the Houdini Fund and helping people, you know, who have health issues, that don't have enough money to make ends meet with insurance or whatever kind of a thing. But, I think that you certainly have given so much to the fraternity selflessly, never expecting anything back, but it has come back to you in spades as far as the love and support.
Oh, it's a thousandfold. I mean, I understand the impact I've had in the Boston area, New York area, between the teaching at all the summer camps and the SYM and the SAM, the IBM. What I didn't realize, honestly, how far-reaching this was.
Yeah.
And I've had calls and emails and financial support and spiritual support from Australia, from Singapore, from Japan, all over the world.
You're wondering
on a constant basis.
Yeah, how these people know and what? Yeah, that's amazing.
Well, the second day I was in the hospital, the hospital administrator came into my room and said, "Would you please have your family and friends stop calling? We've had 1,500 calls in 2 days.
Oh my gosh!
And you're blocking our phone service." okay. So, you
know. I'll send out some mentally telepathic thing. Tell them stop calling.
Well, we sent out an email to people, and it spread around very quickly. But as I said, the support has been wonderful. And it's not all about the financial support. That's very helpful. It really got me through some tough times.
Oh, sure.
But there were people who said, you know, we can't afford to give you any money, but we can come and do your laundry, or we can come and do grocery shopping.
And that's what you need.
Yes.
You know.
And that got me through it. You know, everyone in this
industry. The hands are what's important. I mean, you know, good thoughts. It's like, you know, live well and then walk on. But then you really need to have physically someone to use their hands to go and do something.
And most definitely. You know, and I can't thank people enough. If I started listing names, you'd run out of tape.
Yeah, stop. Yeah,
so. Do they even use tape anymore? I don't know.
I remember one of the things you had posted, I believe, it showed a picture of David Copperfield was wearing one of the bands also. You were, said you were so surprised about that.
Oh, I was. And I had a couple of phone calls from David, and I had a video message from David and Matt King and Lance. I just had dinner with Lance yesterday, and we talked about it at length, about the whole bird connection. And it's been overwhelming.
That's never bothered him, as far as the doves. He's never had
Not everybody gets affected by it, as we talked about in the previous interview. And you know, he was surprised at it, but he said there's other people that have been on his staff that, you know, were coughing once in a while. So it's out there.
Yeah. Let's go off on what your passion is, and that is teaching youth and working with them. So are you kind of getting back again with working, helping the kids?
Most definitely. When I was discharged from the hospital in September, even in a wheelchair and a walker, one of the first things I did was go to our monthly SYM meeting.
Okay.
You know, I've been running the SYM assembly in Boston for 28 years as of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And,
congratulations.
Thank you. I've been trying to quit for 27. But they keep
dragging you back.
The National Council 2 years ago changed the name of it to the John Calvert David Oliver Assembly.
Oh, nice.
So now I can't quit because they put my name on it.
Yeah. You got to wait until, like, John has died.
That's true. Well, no, thank you. Been there, done that.
Okay.
But no, I've been, you know, I was doing Skype lessons from the hospital for certain kids around the country, and I'll be going to Tannis Camp, as I said, next week when the convention is over. So, yeah, the teaching has always been my passion. But now I have a new mission, which is promoting organ donation.
I had thought about that. That's true. And okay, talk about that. So how can people donate? What do you recommend that people do? Driver's license?
License in the U.S. is pretty much the easiest way to do it. Next time you renew your driver's license, just check off the box for organ donation. I know in Massachusetts they're actually going to be turning it into an opt-out situation as opposed to an opt-in.
So you're automatically
you're going to be an organ donor unless you want to opt out.
Yeah.
So organs will be more readily available. And much like blood donations, people don't think about it until they see a sign, or they see, you know, you're driving down the street, you see a sign at a church that says organ, you know, blood donations today.
Yeah.
Organ donations, not so much. So if I were a plumber, let's say, I might have 12 or 13 friends. As an entertainer, I see thousands of people a year, so I'm taking this platform that I have, and I'm spreading the word about organ donation in my show. There's a little piece that I do in my show with a balloon that I'm not going to spoil for you, it's not dark. There's a little bit of humor in it, but it talks about my story a little bit.
And the importance of
organ donation. And I've had people crying and cheering at the same time in the middle of my show for this one-minute piece.
Right.
When I did this at the Castle back in April, the week that I got home, I had over 50 emails from people saying, we saw your show at the Castle, we were so touched, we went home and became organ donors.
Amazing.
So for me, that's my new mission.
New mission, yeah.
You know, because
that's
organ people
save other lives.
There are over 3,000 people a year that die in the U.S. waiting for organs.
Hmm.
And to me, that's far too many.
I know right now, of course, Joni Spina's in Houston back home. Yep. You know, she's just waiting for the call, you know, because she has to be there in Houston whenever they call. And they say, you know, we've got a donor and need to be here shortly, and she needs to jump over there. So she's, I know you are kindred spirits in more ways than one.
We are. Joni and I have become very close in the past 5 years. I've known her forever, but we've been very close, comparing notes. You know, we both have a dark sense of humor. You're both originating from Boston. You know, so we're comparing who has the best, you know, scars, who has the worst doctors, who has more pills. But, you know, in our times of need, we both have been there for each other.
Yeah.
And when my lungs first came in, my first two thoughts were, holy goodness, I've got lungs. The second thought was, why didn't Joni get hers?
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about that. And she said, David, they gave you 2 weeks to live. They gave me 6 months. You need them now.
Yeah.
So that's the type of relationship we have. And I've tried to help her with doctors and connecting her with my doctors in Boston who have contacted the guy in Houston that are now helping her. But she's at the point now where she needs not only the lungs, but she needs a liver as well. And it's a very, very tough situation.
See you both.
very, very tough situation because all the organs have to come from the same person.
Yes.
And the operations have to be done at the same time.
Right. Because and she has both the liver and
lungs and the liver, yes. Yeah. And it's a really sad situation. And anybody that can have, I know she's also, you know, financially strapped.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not talking out of school. That's just the way it is.
Well, she has been on the podcast and has wanted everybody to know that David Copperfield has really been helping her a lot. But
most
even
definitely.
Here, they're raising some money for her also. You
yes.
know, here trying to supplement that.
And trust me, every penny helps.
Yeah.
You know, I've been the recipient of it very humbly so. Mm-hmm. And I know she was embarrassed at first to ask for any help of any kind,
yeah.
as I was. You know, we're all strong people. We're all you know, go-getters. And to be on the receiving end is very humbling.
Yeah.
But your heart and your head have to be separated.
Yeah.
And she needs our help right now. And I'm still accepting help, and people are still helping me, and that's wonderful, and I love it. But she needs it more right now. I'm doing okay.
Yeah, yeah. The 6 months is kind of...
It's not a good situation, and she's very, very aware of it. She doesn't kowtow around it. It's sad.
Yeah.
But there's hope.
Yep.
There is hope.
Hope. So that's the magic word right there, is hope.
Yeah. When I saw her at the Magic Castle Awards, she didn't know that I was there, and at one point we connected. And she just looked up, and her face just lit up, and she started telling people, I'm the before, David's the after. I'm the before, and I'm going to be the after soon. So hopefully we can all get together, and through our prayers and support, both, as I said, financially, spiritually, morally, we can get her back.
That's great. Good. David, thanks very much for your time. Thanks
My
for being here. Always
Scott.
A great
day. Not to go spend
okay.
some money in the dealer's room.
Okay. Very good. That was David Oliver for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. So we are now in the dealer's room and over by Magic Inc's shop, and here with Sandy Marshall. Hi, Sandy.
Hello, hello.
And I wanted just to chat with you about several things. First thing comes to mind, of course, with Simon Lovell. You've
yeah.
posted a few pictures, you know, on right. Facebook and everything. I've called Simon. I've gotten his answer machine and everything, and I'm sure everybody and their sister's probably calling him. So
well, he doesn't have his phone. He's in the hospital.
In the hospital,
yeah.
And so he doesn't have a cell phone. So
correct.
I have to call direct to the hospital.
And he doesn't have a phone in his room, but if you call the hospital, they will go get him and bring him to the phone.
Okay, so he's ambulatory and everything.
He is, yeah.
Now, I saw it first posted was that somebody said that it was a stroke. He said, nope, that's a rumor. Said, no, we're going to check us out. So I wanted to get it straight from the horse's mouth. And you can talk about beating a dead horse later.
Okay.
But straight from the horse's mouth.
Well, the diagnosis from the doctor is alcohol-induced dementia. His short-term memory is pretty much shot.
Okay.
And he needs to stop drinking, but it's Simon, and I don't believe he ever will.
Wow.
I love him. He's a great guy. We're actually, see that little sign over there called Betcha?
Yep.
That's Simon's book, and it's coming out today. We'll have copies here in a couple of hours. And it's a great book.
Yep, he told me he was working on that, so I want to get one when I'm here, so it's coming out shortly. Okay.
It's great fun. He does all of the, you know, bar bets that you
sure.
can't win. For instance, can you name the four... the presidents on the four lowest denomination American bills.
The lowest denomination
yeah.
bills? You mean like Washington, Lincoln?
Well, let's see. Washington's
On the $1 bill.
One, yeah.
Okay, but these aren't bills or are they on coins?
Bills. No, on bills.
Okay.
And the next would be?
Lincoln.
Lincoln. So you've lost the bet already.
He was a president.
Yes, but Jefferson was on the two, and you didn't mention
right.
that. Okay.
And then the other one you would lose because it's... I know that Jackson was not a president.
Jackson was the seventh president of the United States.
Okay.
And but on the 10, Hamilton was not the president of the United States.
That was the one I was thinking was not
right.
president.
And,
okay.
and when Simon made the bet with me, I'm the only one who beat him because he didn't say president of the United States. He said president. And I said... Well, I happen to know that Alexander Hamilton was not president of the United States, but he was the president of the St. Andrew Society of the State of New York, of which I'm a member.
Oh, my.
And he said, damn you.
Okay, so there's a little aside. That,
yeah.
Another part of the bet.
You can beat the odds sometimes.
So it was alcohol-induced short-term...
Yeah.
So that's what I... kind of had heard that he really doesn't have much of a long-term memory at all. So it's just he forgets about conversations he just had earlier in the day? Or?
Literally, I was with him last Monday and Tuesday before I flew to Chicago and then came down to St. Louis here at the convention. You know, he thought he was in England during our conversation. I corrected him and said, no, Simon, we're here in Queens. And an hour later, we're still talking, and he made reference to being in England again. And it happened three times during during my stay with him. So he's confused.
Yes.
But some of the time, he's still his own self.
What does the doctor say as far as, is it reversible? And if his liver starts getting better? Or
well, he said it's a tough one. If he keeps drinking, it will only get worse.
Yeah. Well, I remember a few years ago, you know, he was on the wagon and he was showing me his coin and all that, you know. We were in a bar when he was showing it to me.
Yeah, sure. What else?
Yeah.
Simon is a genius in so many ways.
Sure.
We've been working together on a project about the life of Titanic Thompson. It's been nothing but a pleasure writing with him.
Sure.
He is, of course, the consultant on the television show White Collar.
Yes.
And they have one more season to go.
Well, now, he was telling me about that the last we chatted, and saying that they changed producers, directors, and they were going a different direction, and he wasn't sure whether he was even going to be involved as a consultant this new season. Have they talked?
I don't know one way or the other, but I do know that it's only one season left.
It seemed like they had a pretty good thing going, but I did hear that they were going to be.
They would be crazy to lose Simon. He's
invaluable.
And also, he's a real deal.
When I last talked with him, he'd give me a link to a short film that he had done where he was playing Beelzebub.
Yeah. I saw it.
Yeah.
And he's wonderful in it.
He was. Yeah. I may have to find that link and put that on, post that here. In that regard, it seems like that film was playing, I want to say, one of the film festivals or something, maybe in New York.
I think it won some award.
I think so,
too. I don't know what exactly, but Simon told me it won some award.
Because he was hoping for this to maybe catapult into some other type of acting.
Sure.
On something then beyond that.
Yeah, he was really good in it.
Yes, he was. And so, whenever that he went in, so it sounds like that there's no real way or easy way to contact him or leave messages or anything.
Well,
or what do you recommend for people who do want to?
You can contact him by calling Elmhurst General Hospital,
in Queens,
and they will bring him to the phone.
Okay, then.
Yeah, that's the only way. He doesn't have a phone in his room, as I say.
Sure. Okay.
And I believe that he's going to be going back to England and staying with Tony, his father. You know, his mother recently died, but his father's still around, and I think Simon is probably going to go back there at least for a while to convalesce.
Okay. And now, the new book that's coming out then over there, then it's called Betcha.
It's called Betcha, How to Win Free Drinks for Life.
And that's going to be available then through Magic Inc.?
Through Magic Inc. and
elsewhere? I mean,
elsewhere,
you're going to have it too? Okay.
Well,
I said no, if you had an exclusive, you guys were writing it?
No one's going to have it but us today.
Okay.
But in a couple of weeks, it'll be all around.
Okay. Yep. Want to be sure to have a link to that for people who want to see that and give more information. So what other project or what other new book have you guys got coming out? Or what are you working on, Sam?
We just came out with The Complete Al Leach. That's 4 days ago. Today, we're coming out with Simon Lovell's new book called Betcha.
Mm-hmm.
And in about 3 weeks, we're coming out with a book called McComical, The Wit and Wisdom of Billy McComb. So we've published 3 books in 4 weeks or so.
And wow.
Never again. too much work. One at a time from here on.
Well, does that demand that you were going to be spending more time in Chicago? I mean, I know you're in New York quite a bit then, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, my wife and I technically live in New York, but I spend equal amounts of time in Chicago.
Chicago as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be, after the convention, I'm in Chicago until the 24th of July, and then I'm back there about 10 days later.
And I understand that there's going to be a convention coming up in Chicago.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Right. Well, we're doing a 50th anniversary celebration of Magic Inc. at this particular location on Lincoln Avenue.
Lincoln.
And the alderman, finally, has agreed to change the name of the street outside the shop to J. Marshall Way. We've been working on them for a while. And,
I mean, not like over a weekend, but it's an honorary thing, but it's actually...
It's an honorary thing, but it'll, I guess, be about a year. It'll be out.
Okay. Wow.
And We're very happy about that. I tried to do it while Jay was still with us for his 80th birthday, but finally got it done. And so we're going to do it in the celebration. And we have, you know, great magicians coming in to be part of that 3-day celebration. We literally only have a few tickets left. I think like 15 tickets left.
Because you're not holding it there at Magic 8. You're going to be having a hotel, so you got to.
It'll be at a theater, not a hotel. It's the Witt Theater, or actually Theater Witt, they call it, and it's 1229 Belmont, and it's a beautiful theater with a wonderful rake. Every seat's a good seat, and well, look at the lineup. We have Thompsonian Company, Max Maven, Richard Turner, Axel Hecklaw is coming in from Germany. Dan Harlan is coming in. Dave Cox, wonderfully funny guys. Hell, Dave is probably my best friend in the world now. And Simon was scheduled to be with us, but I don't think he's going to make it given his health problems. So
this is just around the corner, July the 17th through the 19th.
17th, 18th, 19th. And Eugene Berger and Tomas Medina are going to step in for Simon. So,
yeah.
And we have you know, lots of other surprises. Louis Carrion is going to be there. David Kovac. John Stetson's coming in from Boston.
Yeah.
Great lineup and wonderful magicians. And there's also going to be an adult show.
Late night.
Which is a separate admission. But after an idea that Jay had many years ago, we're going to have Magic Inc. presents their second annual Wankers Night. Years ago, Jay, when Pat Page was in town, Jay thought, let's do one of these bawdy magic comedy shows and bring in a stripper, and we'll call it Wankers Night. Well, Frances was upstairs. She just knew they were doing something called Wankers Night. But she thought it had something to do with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Well, of course it does. Yeah, let's go with that.
Wasn't, you know, the hippest of the hip. Anyway, they did this, and the magicians all had a great time. I remember my pal Tim Felix was there when he was a teenager, first time he'd seen a naked lady, or somewhat naked lady.
Yeah.
And he talks about it even today with a lecherous grin that you couldn't get off his face with a crowbar. But let's see, Graham Putnam was there. And Graham said it was really a pretty tame thing. And this is also
going to
be
by today's standards, I'm sure.
Well, and this thing we're doing this time, we're going to have a superstar, Eva LaFeva is her name, and she's a wonderful talent, a burlesque artiste.
Yes.
And we're going to have Tomas Medina, Dave Cox. I'm going to, you know, be involved, and we're going to do a whole bunch of comedy and body humor. And it's the second ever Wankers Night for Magic Inc. Because when Fran found out what Jay had done, you know, the magicians went home and told their wives what a wonderful time they had, and they had a burlesque artist, and the calls started coming into Frances the next day, and her reaction was, Jay did what? So our first annual Wankers Night was our first and last annual Wankers Night until now. We're going to, for the 50th anniversary at Lincoln Avenue, we're going to do a celebration and have a bit of bawdy fun late night.
So for information on the convention, you say a few seats are still available. But what's the website? Or
it's,
go to Magic Inc. Or
go to magicinc.net.
Okay.
And you can order online or call directly into the shop at 773-334-2855.
Okay. One last thing, and I'm going to kind of let you go.
Yeah.
Because I know we're here in the dealer's room and starting to get kind of busy, too.
Got to get back to work.
That's right. Go make some money. And that is, as I recall, that you had done a one-man show that you had produced with Max Maven.
Right.
And so are there any plans to revive that or something similar? Or
something similar, very differently. I've produced a show, and I've directed a show with Richard Turner, and we're going to have the world premiere of that show, which is called Pasteboard Warrior. It opens on the Tuesday, the same as convention. It opens on the 15th of July.
Before this.
And that's for the general public. And the show is called Pasteboard Warrior. A pasteboard being a playing card, and a warrior being someone who uses pasteboards as a weapon of financial destruction.
Interesting.
And Richard is, you know, the best card mechanic on the planet.
Sure.
He's a sixth degree black belt in karate.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh yes, he's blind.
Yeah, legally blind. Yeah.
No, he's not legally blind. He's completely blind. He has no sight at all.
Yeah.
He's got something called Charles Bonnet syndrome, which means that he doesn't see black or gray, as you might expect, but he sees a constant kaleidoscope. He had sight up until the time he was 9, and then had macular degeneration over the course of the next 20 or so years, and then he's been completely blind for quite a while.
So how long is this going to be running?
Well, it's running through the week.
So it's just a week, so it's not going to be like a month-long kind
of thing? No, we're testing the waters, and
okay.
The idea is to, like Max Maven, you know, take it to an off-Broadway venue at some point down the road.
If it works, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds great. And more information, again, can probably be, you got to get that at magicinc.net.
We can do it.
Very good. Sandy Marshall, thank you very much. I appreciate your time, as always.
Thank you, Scott.
So, for the Magic Word Podcast, Scotty out. All right, well, it's about lunchtime, and I thought that you guys can enjoy lunch with us. You know, last week, I think I'd published the one where we had In-N-Out Burger with Bob Cassidy as we chatted, so... Let you enjoy lunch with us with Don Weiberg and Mike Close. So, let me get this set up for you guys.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, I'm trying to eat here. Get the microphone out of my face. Jeez. What is this?
Trying to eat here.
What is wrong with this guy? Not the slightest shred of human decency.
Nope.
Sitting here trying to eat.
Make a lot of noise and it'll...
You know, I recall we did this in Vegas, I think.
We had a big table.
We had a table.
Larry Becker was there, and that was
your wife was there.
That conversation was full of inappropriate comments. As I heard. And then we did that again at the IBM convention in San Diego. That was when I discovered that David Roth wasn't 6'9".
But his hands are big.
But his hands are very big.
Yeah,
he has very big hands
for a short man.
For a gentleman of that height.
That's interesting. There is actually a box inside of a box. This is like a Gazenta or something. I got a sandwich box inside of a sandwich box.
And that's in case the first box breaks.
It's like a two-bagger.
It's a two-bagger. Okay. Exactly right. Just in case the first container breaks.
I thought maybe it was like for condoms or
exactly
something.
Exactly.
Okay, that's, yeah.
I was taking the bubble wrap off this.
Kids, the more you know.
Salt and pepper shaker the other night.
Yeah.
And I said... to the ladies present, I said, this is like removing a condom. I said, wait a minute, I've got a whole new idea, a bubble wrap condom. Just think of the novelty of it.
And the joy, the fun you'd have stomping on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, pop the bubbles. All sorts of possibilities.
You know, it turns out they don't get a lot of work done at the bubble wrap factory.
Why is that? They're having too much fun.
Why do you have to ask?
Yeah, this is Scott, Mr. Obvious Wells.
A man with great possibilities.
This is too little, too literal.
Are we on?
They're on. Hey, speaking of, how's your book going?
So I said to Malini, what are you waiting for?
A week.
Yeah. He just stood there. It's not like I got all the time in the world.
I've only got a week.
I've waited a week. I don't know.
Your book.
Oh,
so now you
tell
me.
Sells. The book, that reminds me.
That reminds me, yeah.
No, that's the book, not
I love
the
this book. You know, that's right at my left hand. I must have got.
Go there just for refreshment and for laughs.
Mm-hmm.
It's just funny.
Pick it up anywhere.
Uh-huh.
And one of my favorites in there is the guy, the banquet hall proprietor, New Year's Eve, band cancels. He's desperate, calls an agent. He's all, everybody's working. He said, I got was an accordion player and a
tuba player.
Tuba player, yeah.
Yeah. Can we leave our stuff?
We book again next year. Can we leave our stuff?
Yeah.
That's, it's been dry for jokes. I haven't really heard any that I...
Well, you're living in Canada now. I mean, that's not a funny country.
Canada's quite a funny country. I'm, writing a book about the transition from living in Indiana to now living in Canada. It's called It's called From Hoosier to Hoser.
I like that.
Or How I Lost an O and an I and Gained an A.
Beautiful.
Yeah, see?
Beautiful.
That
funny,
is funny.
It's
funny. That's
in
funny.
Print. It's funny.
See,
in print.
I was thinking from Indiana to Canada by way of via Las Vegas.
No.
Went the other way.
Yeah.
Went the other way. But, no, Canada's great. Very relaxed. They.
How far north are you?
Not far. We're just in a northern suburb of Toronto, okay. Just up Yonge Street, about 45 minutes.
Okay.
So the
small world.
It is. If you look at the map, we're only you know that quarter far. Inch apart. It's really. It is. Everybody's the same, though. I mean, we were at. We discovered that the townhouse that we're in, when winter finally let go and it started to warm up a little bit, the ants decided to come in. So we bought ant poison. And some other things at Walmart, and the clerk said to me, actual words, do you want me to put the rat poison in a different bag than the food? And I said, you could, but if you don't, you'll save me a step. I mean, I probably gave away a little bit too much with that. But it's the pace is a little different. I find that the United States is just a little too crazy for me right now. But it's not. You know, the Dalai Lama says that you should not let the behavior of others destroy your inner peace. Mm-hmm. But then again, the Dalai Lama couldn't drive from Mississauga to downtown Toronto and be a Buddhist when he got there. I'll tell you that. How was the drive? How was the drive, Your Holiness? Did you see what that moon cut me off? I'd kill that moon. No. But no, we're enjoying Canada very much. My my daughter is in French immersion and learning to do that. Stephen Minch was visiting us a while back. He wanted to know why we put her in French immersion, and I said it's so it, she could say, do you want fries with that in French? I figure she could cover all her employment bases.
Well, French fries.
Poutine. Yeah. Poutine to you, young man.
Poutine.
Poutine. Poutine, a heart Fritz. Attack in a small bucket.
Pomfritz in Germany, I think.
Now, getting back to your poison, my mother had friends, and Art is kind of a ne'er-do-well, delivered pizzas at night and was an exterminator in the day with the same car, not a truck, a car, with all the... poisons in the back, either the trunk or the
pizza
back seat.
Pizza poison. What's your poison?
Yeah. I often wondered, you know.
Wow.
Now, the MUM is published in the U.S. It's not published in Canada, so
offshore.
You send it someplace?
Off lake.
I mean, since I got somebody from the IBM and the SAM, you know, here both, and I know, Don, you work intimately, you know, with Sammy and the Linking Ring. That I'm sure the magazines, like all others, are having difficulty. Has there been any discussion of ever the two combining?
No.
No? Okay.
Not with me. Hmm. Not with me. The way these things work from a technical standpoint in terms of producing the magazine, Lisa and I could pretty much work anywhere there's a fast internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
Because it all comes in. I've got, a fellow, Steve Marshall, who writes the columns in Japan. George Parker, who writes a column, is in the Netherlands. Bill Duncan, who handles the product reviews, editing those, is in Washington State. So, you know, everybody's all over the place, and it all comes in. And,
my purpose is it?
No, thank you. But thank you for offering. I saw where those have been. Oh, that'll be good. Just place it right on. For those of you at home who are suffering hearing loss, that's because... Oh, my God, it's on fire! It's on fire!
Exactly.
The table's on fire!
Well,
boy, that was much funnier for us here around the table than it is for you at home.
Especially if you've got earphones. I know, like Steve Bryan says, he listens to it while he's working out in the gym, so he's got his headphones on. He's probably pulled them out.
I've seen Steve Bryan. That's a lie.
So,
where were we?
You're right as far as you used to be faxing things in, because I used to have to edit things for the convention column for Magic years ago with Terry Seabrook and others who couldn't write with flip,
right?
You know, and you had to edit everything and put in proper grammar and spelling and all that, and just basically retype the whole thing.
Well,
they would fax it to me or send me a floppy disk or something.
Right. I am in total awe and respect of the fact that David Goodsell, did what he did for 30 years before any of this technology came about. Not only in terms of getting the information to me, but just the ease with which I can fact check things. That, you know, is that guy's name spelled right? Boom, boom, pop it into Google. Oh, no, it isn't spelled right.
Who is that guy?
Right away. Just boom, 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 boom. So I edit probably somewhere between 65 and 70,000 words a month. One thing we do that's, it's really a, you know, other than the people who write, it's a three-person operation. Lindsay Smith, who's here, Lindsay Smith from Denver, is our proofreader.
Uh-huh.
And so I'll get the text and do my first edit on it, clean up anything that needs to be cleaned up, and I send it over to Lisa, who lays it out. Then she sends it back to me, and we do something that I don't know that anybody else does. I read it out loud to her.
Hmm.
And that way we catch a lot of things. And I've always proofed things that way, back from the very first workers' books. Read them out loud to see if you have
mistakes. I did that back in the 70s.
Yeah. So we catch a lot of mistakes that way, and then it goes to Lindsay, and then comes back, and then after everything is all put together, it gets uploaded to the printer, and off it goes. They do their magic, and a while later I get my magazines. The only real difference with our moving to Canada has been I used to get an overnight copy of the magazine to see how it looks, and that's simply too expensive. Everybody's trying to keep budgets tight. And so now it goes out to Lindsay Smith, who gets a next day copy, and he can make sure that there isn't anything that's horrible. But
sometimes when you see it actually
printed, Lisa has, over the years, and you know, at the end of December we'll have done 6 years of the magazine. Lisa has become very, very good in knowing how the difference between how something is going to look on the screen and how it's going to look in print, so she can make all the adjustments that she needs to make.
And Don, you're a proofreader for the Linking Ring. Sammy sends you stuff?
Some stuff,
some
yeah.
articles?
Mm-hmm. I catch a mistake or two. It's inevitable.
And so I'm sure he runs it through his spell checker, and then, but you're looking at it from a magical standpoint, I guess. Do you read tricks to find out?
Usually it's, you know, events and that kind of thing.
What about tricks, for an example? You know, that if somebody submits a trick, you actually walk through it and try it and make sure that the description is proper and they're using the correct hand or finger?
Well, I've been... It all depends. I mean, I've been reading magic books now for 55 years, I guess. So I'm real good at reading and visualizing what's supposed to happen.
Yeah, you're looking more and more like Joe Stevens every day, you know?
And I feel bad about that. It's... Joe's great, but he's like halfway through on Walden Pond or whatever. That I'm just waiting for somebody to come out and yell, "You old poop!"
You know, Sammy, they asked me to do trick reviews, and not for me.
Yeah,
that's a tough job.
But for example, Tony Cabral, who's a very fine card magician on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Just sent me a column, and he said, go back and the third phase of this routine, read through it and see if you can't explain it a little bit better than I did. And I wasn't sure what he was trying to go after with it, and I worked that through with cards in hand. And so he sent me a video on this last phase, and then that I could clean everything up. But it takes there's a lot more work putting that magazine together than most people realize. And the big part of it isn't just the editing of the words and tightening up the text, it's keeping all the plates spinning. So you're always down the road figuring out who's going to be on the cover, you know, this month, and who's going to be on the cover that month, and who's going to continue writing columns and what
have you. Do people make suggestions to you from the board, or is this something that you kind of grasp out of the air, or do you have something in mind that has to do with whoever's topical or popular in the media that month, or Chris Angel does something, or whatever, or what do you...
You can't really... The schedule of magazine production is such that if something happened tomorrow, it's going to be in the September issue.
Of course, yeah.
So I can't really make editorial decisions on topical things that would be...
You need to have a mind reader or a mentalist. Maybe you need to have... somebody like Bob Cassidy or somebody perhaps as an editor to kind of tell you the future.
Then you could the magazine could be sent in a little billet sized thing and built into a knife.
You would tear it open.
You could just tear it open and read this little.
Now,
hey, has MUM gotten here? Hang on, I'll let you know. Now concentrate.
Now, what about letters of complaint? Do you get many?
I'll be very honest. I get almost no feedback from anybody.
Really?
Yeah. Good, bad, or indifferent?
Nothing.
Well.
Nothing. And I mean, that's not a criticism, everybody.
No. Just, everything's going along fine. Until something goes wrong, then you're probably here.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a great joke about that, about a kid who is 12 years old, and he's never said a word, has never spoken. Just hasn't spoken. There's nothing wrong with him physically. There seems to be nothing wrong with him psychologically, but he just hasn't spoken. And then one Thanksgiving dinner, a whole family's around the table, and he looks up, and he says, somebody pass me the damn mashed potatoes. And I go, Jimmy, you spoke. Why haven't you spoken before? He says, well, up till now, everything's been okay. So there you go.
Ain't the way I heard it, but
it's all right.
But Cindy got a letter or email complaining about John McLaughlin being on the cover of the Lincoln Ring. CIA. This letter went on and on and on.
Because he was appointed by Bush or something.
Did you see the letter?
No. You did share that with me. Yes. Yes.
He was appointed by a radical president, and this guy went on in the ranch.
Yeah.
And do you know John McLaughlin at all?
I've met him.
The nicest, quietest guy.
Yeah.
Not political. I mean, maybe in that context, but
But that's not what our magic organization's about. It doesn't have anything with agendas.
So everybody's life is pretty busy. You ask if I had any plan. Generally about the magazine, and I do. And so far, I'm the only one who's sort of playing along with it. But my vision for the magazine was that it wouldn't be so much a magazine as it would be a handbook that everybody in the organization gets every month.
Yep.
And it could be used as topics of discussion at assembly meetings.
Right.
Because, I'm probably the only person in the world who actually reads every assembly report every month, because I do edit those. I mean, I don't edit them with the...
I think the Lincoln Ring has somebody who actually does that. Report. But you read them all.
Huh? I do. I do it. I edit every single word that's in the magazine. Nothing hits it that I have.
It goes out under your name. You're the
I'm the guy. I'm the guy. So I'm not as rigorous with the editing as I am with other things in the magazine, simply because I don't believe that it's an area of the magazine that is scrutinized as closely as the articles and things like that. But I still try to clean stuff up. And it's frustrating to see that the assemblies, for the most part, are still in this kind of rut of silk night, mentalism night,
Your favorite method night,
things that you found in your junk drawer that you've never moved. Now, that's nice, but the problem is it puts the onus of the quality of the meeting on the members, and it's just going to happen by chance. Whether or not you have a good and interesting meeting depends on what anybody decides to work on.
Mm-hmm.
It would seem to me that if instead of that you said, well, in last month's issue of the magazine, Levent offered these ideas on better stage magic. So everybody read that article, and next month we're going to spend a part of the meeting talking about it and make somebody be a leader and have them carry the discussion.
Yeah.
And this, to me, would be a way to constantly improve the level of the magic that's going on in these things.
Mm-hmm. And you could rather than just showing up month to month. Did anybody bring anything to do tonight?
Yeah. And this would be something that everyone would have. And so in the July issue of the magazine, I went back and listed the stuff that in the last 6 years we've run in MUM. And if anybody actually paid attention to that stuff, I think they would be far improved magicians, because we've been lucky and had some really, really high quality material. Anyway, that's the overarching plan.
What's one of the most popular articles that people, I mean, you don't get a lot of feedback, you said, but what do you think is the one that people turn to? I mean, I love Bruce Calver's Tech Talk.
That's what I told Mike yesterday.
Yeah. Gold. There's something every month I'll go out and end up buying whatever he'd recommend,
Well, I think the single best thing, let me not say that. I think one of the best things we've run
That's one of the things that I wanted to run from the day I took the job. We serialized a set of lecture notes that Charlie Reynolds put out called Observations. And I already had another column that was called Observations, so I forget we changed the title. But in these very brief essays, Charles was spot on explaining exactly what you needed to know if you wanted, if you were going to be a good magician. I mean, they really are great. They are succinct, and they are... And nobody's ever mentioned that they even read them to me, but I think it's one of the really good things that was there in the magazine. The other thing that has been tremendous in the magazine, and very few people have commented on, is the 12 columns that Scott Alexander wrote on Denny Haney's stage repertoire. I mean, that cost you $1,000 if you went and sat down with Denny to get lessons on all that stuff.
What shows he used for...
What tricks he used, how he did it. Fabulous series.
So. Now, when did that run? So people can go back and look at that.
Remember Rick Johnson?
Lincoln Ring. Come a little closer with his column, yeah.
And after one or two of his columns appeared, this is how long has he been gone? And this is before the internet. I wrote a letter to him complimenting him on the column. I said, it's very interesting, stimulating. It's the very first thing I read after I read all the Ring reports.
Funny. I think he died about 20 years ago or so.
Yep. But this is 2014?
Yep.
So the Denny Haney things ran from January 2013 to December 2013.
Okay.
All of 2013.
So you can go back and look those up.
Absolutely.
Okay. And they're online digitally, the PDF?
The last 3 years' worth, I think, are on available.
Through the magicsam.com?
Yep.
Okay. And you have to be a member and that you can log on to show
you have to log in with your membership. I think the first time you log in with your membership number and then you can change the password to whatever is convenient for you. Yeah, it's a pretty good system.
Because the Linking Ring is also online now, but it's not on a searchable database yet. Is that right? I mean, it doesn't go back too far, like 2000 or something?
Eventually, and it's very close to being, the entire...
Yeah, because we had all those on CDs way back.
Yeah, that. Yep.
That was.
There was a certain reviewer that panned that,
and by
and with good reason.
And with good reason.
Oh yeah.
Nothing is more frustrating than, and I mean, this was really to their credit when that Linking Ring on CD-ROM came out.
Yeah.
It was really the first attempt that anyone had done to take the entire file of a magazine...
And
put it into a searchable format. The problem was, whatever method they used for the search was faulty. Because if I searched on J. Marshall, on a page where I knew J. Marshall appeared, if his name was hyphenated, it wouldn't find it.
Interesting.
So if it was J-M-A-R hyphen and then the next line is S-H-L, it wouldn't find it. Also, none of the ads were OCR'd, so you couldn't find anything in the text there. And that's a flaw. That's a big flaw for anybody doing serious research, unfortunately. So I couldn't not say that, Were people mad at me about that?
Not you particularly. From what I recall, the company that did it, that the president or whoever, got pissed off. And that's when we acquired the master copies, and he washed his hands of it. And then when Ask Alexander came out, it just
blew it out the water.
I gave mine away to my friend Jeff from Pittsburgh to get rid of them one day. Popped in.
Ours are our lovely coasters at our house. Please put your beer on this on volume 23 of the Linking Ring.
Well, Don just bought a bunch of MUMs, didn't you, at the
I was telling him.
Half-price bookstore.
Fun to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's
a lot of good material in there.
Well, it's extraordinary. I am always astonished, and I wrote about this a few months ago. If you go on Murphy's Magic Supplies and you look at the products, the current products they have for sale, tricks, DVDs, books. That number is close to 10,000 things. Of those, they count about 6,000 or so as new items.
New things coming out all the time? Well, would a new item be a new magazine or a new book?
Anything, just a new thing that they're carrying.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is, I haven't figured out what guys think they're accomplishing other than...
having your name on something?
Yeah, you know, nothing is vetted these days. It can't be vetted because it just comes out.
I just had someone, on a related note, contact me recently and saying that they wanted to see about forming a new ring outside of Houston because, you know, they live 40 miles away and it was difficult to get in. So anyhow, as the TVP for South Texas, I was getting back with him. I said, well, first of all, I suggest that you start getting together and actually meeting, and I'll come up and talk with you about the benefits and belonging to the ring, et cetera. Then he wrote back to say, well, you know, the guys who are interested in forming a ring have kind of changed their mind. You know, these are fellows I've been talking to through Theory 11 and on different forums, and they decided that we really, you know, don't want to get together. We get enough information on the forums and everything. But they said, we don't want a bunch of old guys telling us that what we've invented has already been invented by somebody before.
Well... here's the problem. 40 years ago, if you wanted to bring anything to the marketplace, there were only a couple ways to do it. The main way being you'd find a Jay Marshall or a Lou Tannen or Lloyd Jones, somebody who was in the, or Abbott's, somebody who was in the business of putting magic in the marketplace.
Right.
And you'd show them whatever it is you had, your manuscript, your new trick, or whatever. And they would say,
based on their experience and knowledge.
Exactly. That's a new thing. I've never seen anything like that. We're going to put that out. Or they would say, well, that's an old thing that you're just reinvented something that's out there. Or they would say, that's not a very good thing and we're not going to put it out. Or they would say, that's not bad, but it needs work. And you would leave having gained some insight as to where the...
Sure, thing. Providence.
Now, nobody has to do that now. Nobody has to do that now. The technology is there so that in my home, I can bring a DVD to the marketplace or an ebook or through Lulu.
In the same day. Yeah.
Without another human being having to look at it and vet it and do any kind of due diligence on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I ran into this problem recently with a magic company that put out just a very, very inferior version of a trick of mine. Had they asked anybody with any experience, my name would have appeared or instantly that this was my trick. And I even said to them, in the future, if you're not sure, ask. Ask a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's not a criticism if you reinvent something. Everybody does it. I remember when John, you know, when I first met John Cornelius, John is a guy who doesn't really like to read books. And consequently, a lot of stuff he invented was great, but he wasn't the first guy to invent that.
Yeah.
The good idea is you save yourself a lot of time by knowing what's come before.
Mm-hmm.
And this is no longer seems to be of major concern to a lot of people bringing this to the marketplace. Well, who suffers here? Well, the people who suffer are the poor guys who shell out $35 for a one-trick DVD when the information is in Greater Magic. And that's not even a joke. I mean, I reviewed a couple of DVDs where I said these tricks are in Greater Magic. So, you know, a lot of people say they don't like to read. And I say, okay, I understand. But don't look at me that my ability to read and understand from a book is genetically encoded.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't born with this ability. I lived isolated from other magicians. If I wanted to learn tricks, I had to be able to go from printed word into three-dimensional action.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't
like
come
engineer.
Easy. Exactly. Yeah. Didn't come easy. You got to work on it. I'm a visual learner.
One of the things that I find annoying is not only kids, but anybody who will buy a trick and put it on YouTube. A commercial trick that they paid whatever.
Yeah.
And then they do a terrible job of demonstrating it. And it seems
It's like a railroad car going by over there all of a sudden. Sorry about that.
Well, we can talk all we want about drumming them out of the core because of their exposure. You're known by the company you keep.
Well, one of the things that I very much enjoy is going up to Mike Siegel's Sorcerer's Safari's Magic Camp.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how I was going to feel about this whole thing. First time we went up, which was 2 years ago, and I just had a great time. And it's just invigorating for me, and I think it's invigorating for the kids who are up there. But here's a story.
And you wrote about that.
I did write
one of the magazines that I got.
I did write about that. But here's one of the, and I just had to mention this to Christian Engblom, because I met Christian in 1997, and I think I've saw him once since then, but it was backstage at a Penn & Teller show, and we didn't get a chance to talk. But in 19... Oh, so here's the story. So Lee Asher asked me to sit in on one of his card classes and talk about the Pharaoh Shuffle, which I did. And after I talked about it, a kid says, well, do you do a table Pharaoh Shuffle? I said, no, I do not. And the reason I don't is I never sit down when I work.
Yeah.
So that's a move that requires a lot of practice. And if I'm never going to sit down, there are other things I really ought to practice other than a move that I'll never use.
Right.
Then somebody said, well, what about the anti-pharaoh? Now, I don't know if you know about the anti-pharaoh, but you must...
Is that done by anti-Harry Reiser?
Reiser, no. But while Christian Engblom is at this convention, you must go up and ask to see this, because it is the damnedest thing you will ever see in your life.
It's amazing.
He takes a deck of cards and springs it from hand to hand. When they arrive in his left hand from his right hand, the cards have alternated every other one in jog and out jog.
Yeah, just a springing action. It is amazing.
It is. So he showed me this in 1997. I was lecturing in Finland, took me aside and said, I want to show you something, but you can't tell anybody about it. I said, okay, fine. And he showed me this anti-pharaoh. Now, this is the story I'm telling to these kids at Magic. And I said, so I never told anyone until people started to tell me about it. Maybe 8-10 years later, people said,
had seen it, heard about
it. Have you seen this guy? He does this crazy thing. I thought, okay, it's out now. It's not a secret anymore. And one of the young men who was listening to the story said to me, you never told anyone? I said, no, of course I never told anyone. He said, but it was so cool. I said, you don't understand the nature of the thing that you are involved in. This is a hobby built on secrets. You do not establish prestige by giving away what you know. You establish prestige by proving that you're trustworthy. I said, if I had gone around and immediately told everybody about this, Christian would never show me anything else ever again, nor would anybody who knows him, because I couldn't be trusted with a secret.
Right.
And so what happens, I think, on YouTube is there's a desire for these people, in the only way that they have available to them, to prove to everybody else how much they know. And they do this by giving away stuff that's not theirs to give away. But, you know, there's a lot of... The big thing that magicians have to understand is how the trick works is of almost it doesn't mean anything. Yes, secrets are great, secrets are fine, but it's like why I, you know, when the mass magician and all those guys start revealing tricks, I know my stuff's safe for the most part because you can't explain anything I do in a few sentences because the method is a little more complicated than that. So it's like the trick I'm going to show you in a minute that's completely new, won't appear until the October MUM, and is a trick that you have never seen anything like it before. You have never seen anything like it before. I did it for the guys at 31 North a couple weeks ago. Nobody had seen anything like it. It's the most wonderful trick in the world.
And you're going to be able to learn this in the October issue of MUN. What's the name of the trick so I know what to look for?
I call it Scott, This Is Too Good For You. I sort of thought I'd personalize it.
Yeah, it would do it.
The trick's called You Bet Your Life. So It'll be in the October.
Do we need a ticket to get into this?
We do.
No, you don't.
Okay.
You don't have to have your badge. This is the contest.
Okay. Yep, this is the stage contest. Okay, in fact, they're lining up over there. We've got finished lunch. Yeah. All right.
Well, I had a wonderful time. I didn't get a chance to eat, but
right.
Thanks so much for talking during my lunch hour.
Thanks for sharing your salad. That was
we enjoyed
that, though.
Yes, very much.
You know, it's a little bit of rain right there.
Do we actually tip the strippers, or is this... Oh, no, we're not there.
That's for Magic and Martini Thursdays. That's tomorrow.
There's a guy sitting at a restaurant table, a waiter is standing nearby, and there's a live chicken dancing on the table, ripping its feathers off. And the waiter says to the man, the next time you order the chicken strips, you better know what you're asking for.
There we go. And on that, we will conclude. Thank you very much, Mike Close.
Hey, glad to be here.
Is all being taped?
Yes. Well, no, it's being recorded.
I am not a crook.
What is tape? What is it? That's right.
I'm not a crook.
So with the Magic Word Podcast, Scotty out.
For more content, including pictures of those I spoke with in this podcast, commentary, links, timestamps, show notes, and more, be sure to visit the webpage at themagicwordpodcast.com. And you can help spread the word by liking the Magic Word Podcast on Facebook and sharing with your friends. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening. Till next time, Scotty out.